As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
To take it or leave it on the Total Soccer Show. It's the show where we get your hot takes and decide if we're going to take them or leave them. It's that simple. Today, we're fielding takes about an Apple global TV rights takeover. Yes, please. Wilfried Nancy's Premier League credentials, the USWNT starting lineup, and much, much more. Joining me to discuss these hot takes, Taylor Rockwell.
Hello, my friend. I'm excited to be here.
As am I. I should probably say my name. My name's Ryan Bailey. I'm joined also by Joe Lowry.
It's me. I'm Joe. Hello.
It is. Part of the power trio,
I'm
Joe.
Back in. Let's go.
Ryan, would you Ryan, like...
Ryan, we're letting him back in. You sure you want to let him back in?
I can hear you, Taylor. You didn't open your two-lane
what?
Mic.
Oh, sorry. Joe, hello. What are you doing here?
Yeah, what's up?
How about triumvirate? Can it be a part of the triumvirate?
Yes, those have historically always worked out
well. Yeah, I don't have any issue with the trio or the triumvirate part. I just was making the point that trios don't naturally have triangles. That's all that happened yesterday, and you guys freaked out. It's just shameful.
I still don't understand what you mean, if I'm honest.
That's unbelievable. I feel like you're playing dumb on purpose.
Joe, part of the power duo, Thursday Night Lowry, with us once again on the feed. Patreon.com/Total Soccer Show if you want to hear more of Joe's takes and more of our content. We've got bonus episodes on there, bonus videos we put on there all the time. We've got a quiz on the Patreon this feed, this week, excuse me. Go check that one out. It's a lot of fun. And of course, access to our Discord where all the cool kids hang out. Head to the Discord, Disco folks, and help support us if you please. Thank you very much to everyone who does so. All right, Taylor, hot take time. Ready? Ready?
I am prepared.
As am I. Joe is also prepared. Let's get things started with a take that we got from the aforementioned Discord from Peter Shark. Doot, 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 doot. Here we go. Apple should buy the global rights for every league in the world. A one-stop shop would be great for fans and a huge financial win. Now, Joe, obviously my Apple-loving instincts are to say yes, 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 take all day. But also, I would be concerned for the growth of the game in the United States if everything was taken behind a paywall. Because basically, it would mean that all soccer will be taken out of all sports bars, basically, or most sports bars in the country. That would be my concern. I watched this week I watched a Real Madrid Man City game, or a Man City Real Madrid game, I should say. I watched most of it in a bar near my house with very, very casual fans calling them Real Madrid and that kind of thing. And those fans who were exposed to like high level soccer and the drama of a shootout and really enjoyed it, they wouldn't have that anymore. Mm. And we wouldn't be able to grow to the more casual fans. So that would be my concern if we paywalled it. But on the other side, Apple, great, yay, woo.
I kind of figured that that might be your sentiment here, Ryan, as far as the Apple part. Did we not discuss the Apple subscription bar situation when that deal first happened and sort of land on, like, yeah, you can still show those games in bars. Like, we talked about that.
Is the problem.
So in this hypothetical reality that won't ever happen, because this is just not going to happen, where NBC and CBS just give up on everything and ESPN gives up and they all give it to Apple. This is all very hypothetical. But in that hypothetical reality, you're telling me soccer bars wouldn't like figure out how to show soccer on TV?
Sports bars aren't going to go the distance.
In the age of subscription streaming, where baseball is already on Apple TV, where you got, I mean, like, I don't know. I see what you're saying. And in general, what you're saying, Ryan, even though I don't know that that's the best example, what you're saying is the reason to leave this. I have this on my list as well. I just phrased it a little differently. The drawbacks to this idea, which I'm taking purely for selfish reasons, because it would just be nice not to have to like fire up Fubo and then fire up Paramount Plus, which is always like breaking my computer, and then go hop over to Apple and then hop over to Peak. Like, it just would be nice to have it all in one place. So I'm taking it just because I'm a selfish human being. On my drawbacks list, though, the growth of the game is very much on the top of that list. Having everything under one roof, I think, would entice a lot of folks to subscribe. And I do think you would get places showing this stuff anyway. But you lose out some of the accessibility. Like that is a problem. Going through extra hurdles to get games shown in soccer bars, which I acknowledge you would have to do through this process. Going through the extra hurdles for someone who is just like flipping through channels, if that still even happens in 2024. I don't do that. I'm guessing some folks out there still probably do. Like, you lose something when that's behind the paywall, and you lose something when it's in just one corner. Like, there is an upside to having soccer sort of sprinkled in throughout various networks right now. It's that if someone's watching CBS on a Saturday, oh, wow, there's a USL Championship game happening at 4 p.m. Eastern time. What's that? Let me watch it. And you lose out on those kinds of moments. So there are some drawbacks, but I'm going to take it anyway.
A question for me. You all are focused on the U.S. market. Like, Apple is available in England, right? Apple is available in Germany?
Yep.
So if they got the rights to every league, you all are limiting it to the United States. Wouldn't that mean that you could watch the Bundesliga on Apple in Germany and watch the Premier League in England?
Yeah, but I think the point still stands that Ryan is making, and the one that I sort of like piggybacked on. Like, all that stuff's behind the paywall. All that stuff's in one place, regardless of where you are.
Oh, I think this would just cause a global incident is more where I'm coming from. If now you get every soccer league in the world for one subscription fee, you're not going to pay for some of the satellite channels in England or Germany or Spain or China or wherever you may be. So I think it would be very interesting to see how annoyed those broadcasters would be, which is maybe a reason for this to happen. But I am leaving it because I don't like monopolies. And I don't know if you have all the leagues there, does Apple sort of stop any drive towards making the coverage good? Do they still put all the money into every single league? Or is it sort of like, we have every league now, so there's not much you can do about it. We're going to cover it how we want to cover it. I think competition isn't the worst. Now, if Apple took half and Amazon took the other half, still very monopoly, but at least we have two monopolies fighting against each other, and maybe that's pushing them to compete. And then it all splits up and we end up getting cable TV again, is I think what I'm driving towards. So I'm leaving this because I don't like monopolies, but I also think it could cause a global incident, and I'm not sure that's what soccer should be doing either.
Yeah, you make a good point, Taylor. Like, if Apple has, say, Serie A and the Premier League, how much are they going to dedicate to Serie A in terms of resources and making it better? You're quite right there.
Yeah.
I read this as for the US market, because it will be literally impossible to do this in many European markets, the UK included, because systemically it just couldn't happen. And also paywalling all soccer in the UK would, I think, I don't know how quickly the riots would start, but they would start pretty quickly, frankly.
Probably so. I mean, it would be interesting. I really do just have the concerns about once you have every league, like, even with the Premier League, like, I'm assuming they would still allocate a ton of funds to it, but are they going to do it the way NBC does, with the coverage that they provide and the different looks that they have? I don't know. I think once you can rest on your laurels, you're likely to rest.
I like that. That's a good phrase, or a dangerous phrase, if you will. Okay, so mixed ones on Peter Shark's take there. We go to Austin Reed, who says, I'm not even sure I even agree with this, but the best USWNT starting 11 doesn't have Rose Lavelle or Lindsay Horan both starting. Joe, what say you?
I am I got to reread this. The best USWNT starting 11 doesn't have Roosevelt and Lindsay Horan both starting. I take this. They should not both be in the starting lineup. I misread this early in my prep and I had leave. The nuts and bolts of this is Lavelle, no, Horan, yes. That's where I'm at this point, which I recognize is a bit of a U-turn. from where I've been in some past iterations of the U.S. Women's National Team. Things have changed, both on the managerial side and a little bit in how this team plays now. And I think what the U.S. is trending towards fits Lindsey Horan really, really well when she's playing as a deeper midfielder. So I've got Lavelle no, because she's never healthy at this point. And I think Jaden Shaw has very clearly surpassed her as an attacking difference maker. So I would leave Lavelle on the bench. I don't even know if you bring in Lavelle these days because she's not fit. If she is fit, I would bring her to tournaments. But we can't count on that at this point. Jaden Shaw should be starting in those attacking positions. Lindsey Horan playing deeper next to Sam Coffey is something that I'm very much enjoying. I put together a lineup for the U.S. because I think it helps illustrate this point a little bit. We've seen the U.S., man, people are going to get tired of me saying this, attacking a 3-2-5 shape recently as they transition from Blacko and Danofsky to Emma Hayes. Everybody's doing this stuff now. They'll leave one fullback home. They'll push one into the attacking line. They'll play with a double pivot, and they'll have two folks in the half spaces underneath the number nine. And this, I think, is the optimal lineup for the U.S. right now. It's a goalkeeper. I don't much care to listen here, but I don't always love that. And pick any two of Jenna Nyswong or Emily Fox and Crystal Dunn and put them at either right back or left back. I also don't really care a ton about that right now. Naomi Girma and Abby Dahlkemper make out the three, two-thirds of the back three, I guess, with one fullback staying deeper, one pushing high. It's Sam Coffey and Lindsey Horan as that double pivot, both very comfortable on the ball. Horan a bit more creative, can provide those nice line breakers into the half spaces where Jaden Shaw and either Mallory Swanson or maybe Trinity Robbins should be hanging out. And then you've got the other one on the wing, and you've got either Sophia Smith or Kat Macario up top. Like, that for me is the lineup for the U.S. right now.
So you're dropping Alex Morgan?
Oh, yeah. I would have dropped Alex Morgan like a year and a half ago. Absolutely.
I'll take that as well. Joe, I think you may have just answered it in going into some of the detail there, but when you say what the U.S. is trending towards suits Horan, can you explain a little bit more about what the position she is playing, what the position you want her to play, how that gets the better out of her skill set such that we don't have Lavelle starting?
So for me, it's both positional and stylistic as it relates to Horan and the U.S. as a whole. Under Vlatko, it was a lot of shoulder shrug. Like, I don't really know where these players are supposed to be. We're probably going to play a bit more direct, and we're definitely not going to have good attacking spacing. And nobody really looked good in that system, and the U.S. certainly didn't look good in that system. But it ended up putting a lot of pressure on Lindsey Horan to cover ground as one of those, at times, a free eight, kind of ranging box to box without a lot of structure around her. And Lindsey Horan doesn't have a lot of speed. She doesn't have a lot of mobility at this point. She's had knee injuries. She's just not the fleetest of foot. And she would get isolated and exposed defensively in those moments without good structure. On the other side, now as we trend towards the Emma Hayes era, even under Twyla Kilgore, it's been not consistently, but there's been more of, oh, there's a real structure here now. Oh, there's players around me. We can counterpress as a unit, where Horan's mobility is not being exposed. I guess her lack of mobility is not being exposed. And we're seeing the U.S. in possession shift to a style that involves them playing with the ball on the ground a little bit more, still trying to take advantage of the direct wingers that they have, whether that's Sophia Smith on the wing, Mallory Swanson, who was back in for She Believes and looked excellent, Trinity Rodman on the wing. There are tons of searingly direct options in the attack that they should still use, but the U.S. is now finally like having a secondary attacking option where they can control the ball, and Lindsey Horan, when she hears the phrase control the ball, like, her ears perk up because she is so good in tight spots, so press resistant in possession, so clean breaking lines. That's the stuff she does well. And the U.S. are finally leaning into that while giving her defensive cover. And that works well for her.
Joe, who did you have as your midfield three? So you had Coffey, Horan, was it Shaw?
Shaw, but again, in possession, it's not even really a midfield three. It becomes like this box midfield that everybody's using these days. And it's probably Swanson tucking into that other spot opposite Shaw, but it's fluid.
Yeah, I ask because I think it's fascinating that if that's the three as a shorthand, then it means that, yeah, if you have Swanson on the left, if you have Robin on the right, you are coming down to like Sophia Smith or Katarina Macario. So no matter what, you are sitting very, very talented players.
Absolutely.
Which is one of them good problems to have. Joe, I will leave this one as well. I feel hard done by saying I would leave Rose Lavelle off of this team, but at the same time, that's mostly just nostalgia. I love Rose Lavelle. You are correct that the fitness issues alone are a problem. If you are going to put Rose Lavelle in, if she starts this game on the bench, where do you feel like she then best fits in this team as a second half substitute?
Yeah, Lavelle coming off the bench to give you just that little bit of spark. I think she fits really well in the half spaces in this look that I have sort of diagrammed. She's still a very, very good player, and we're going to see good moments from Rose Lavelle at some point this calendar year. I'm just not sure that's going to be with the U.S. at the Olympics. I don't know how often it's going to be with Gotham either. She just can't stay on the field. When she does, she is very often impactful. She's not a very physical defensive presence. She can get bodied in midfield. There are games and moments that I'm not sure she's perfectly suited to. But man, if you want a spark plug, and even if she's fully fit, put her in the half spaces next to Jaden Shaw. Like, there are ways to get Lavelle onto the field. At this point, she's doing a pretty good job, unfortunately, herself of staying out of these conversations because she's not been available. And Jaden Shaw, to her credit, is the truth. I've said it for more than a year now. She's unbelievably good, and she is the in-pen starting, like, chief chance creator here for the U.S.
All right. Thank you very much, Austin Reed, for your take from the Discord. Taylor, hope you're proud of me for pronouncing it Lindsey Horan now. I've changed my ways.
Although, welcome to America, Ryan.
How would you pronounce the One Direction singer whose first name is Niall, just for...
Niall Horan, after the great Lindsey Horan, obviously.
Non-existent anymore, because... There's what, like, one of them is left in the public eye?
He's still alive, Taylor.
He's an independent artist in his own right, Taylor.
Yeah, but we're going Horan for him, too. Just by
he's an independent artist in his own right who does what Simon Cowell tells him. Yeah, got it. Mm-hmm.
Niall Horan. Thank you very much for that one. We're going to take a
quick
break.
I know so little about One Direction.
I'm not going to pretend to be an expert either. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're talking Didier Deschamps. We're talking about the away goals rule and much more back shortly.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to Take It or Leave It. We go back to the Discord for a hot take from Mustard Overlord. Mustard Overlord, king of the condiments there. Very nice indeed. Didier Deschamps is the least valuable manager of a top international team, and the only reason more people don't notice is that France is so unbelievably talented that there's only so much he can drag them down. Joe Lowry is doing the put it to my veins mimicry as we talk here. I don't know, Joe. It feels like you're taking this one. But my comeback would be there must be less valuable international managers than Deschamps. Is Roberto Martinez more
I knew
valuable?
That was the one that was gonna come up.
Is Greg Berhalter more valuable than Didier Deschamps?
Nah, US not a top national
Gareth,
team. No
Gareth
way.
Southgate?
No,
maybe
I have Didier Deschamps here, and I don't know how close it is. Bobby Marts was on my list. I thought it would take longer for him to come into the conversation because Graham isn't with us on the show today. But man, I love this take. I was going to tie this to the women's side of the game, and just to do that once more with Vlatko. Now that Vlatko's gone, we can give this one to Didier Deschamps, and we can say this is true. There's so much tactical chaos with France. You watch them; there is so often like not really a discernible understanding of where players are supposed to move. There's, you know, folks popping up in the same space at the same time. There's no off-ball movement. That stuff is fairly common at the international game because you don't have a lot of time to train, and oftentimes these aren't the best coaches that are coaching at the international level. Like, is Didier Deschamps one of the best managers in the world? Was he ever? No and no, right? Like, oftentimes it's the best coaches that want to be on the field week in and week out, that want to be coaching the biggest games week in and week out. And that doesn't describe the international game. So you often are left with sort of the B-tier coaches anyway. But man, France, with all the talent they have, I recognize that they've won a World Cup. They won that World Cup in spite of Didier Deschamps, not because of Didier Deschamps. Oof. You watch this team play, there's no way that you come away thinking, man, what a well-drilled, like really tactically cohesive team. No, like there's so much quality in this team, and the players, to their credit, have done a fantastic job over the years. I just don't enjoy watching France, and it is such a waste with all the quality that they have that there is not at least some additional structure in that team.
Joe, just to ask a follow-up, when Real Madrid had Zidane as coach, did they win in spite of him or because of him?
I don't know that I feel super strongly one way or the other, but certainly it was far more about the players and their excellence than Zinedine Zidane.
Interesting.
What do you think, Ryan? You trying to heap credit on Zidane, or are you trying to take
it? I'm trying to say, I'm not like a Deschamps fanboy, but I think a man who won the World Cup as a player and a manager must have some value to that team, whether it's intrinsic, whether it's not necessarily because he's tactically astute, but because of the value he represents that team. And I think Zidane had that presence and had that meaning for the players he was representing.
Credit to Deschamps. I mean, he's controlled that locker room well. Oh, wait, no, that's not right. I don't know. Yeah, yes, Ryan. Like, Didier Deschamps knows more about soccer and will forget more about soccer than I'll ever know, right? Like, I'm not trying to say that this guy doesn't know anything about the game, but there's just no way that you can sit down and watch 90 minutes of France playing soccer and think, like, man, what a, like, well-coached, well-organized team. That has never happened under Didier. Oh, that's maybe hyperbolic. But that is so rare to happen under Didier Deschamps with this French team. So I take your point, Ryan. Like, he's surely helping this team in one way or another, and having some continuity maybe is not the worst thing. But, yeah, he's not driving France's success.
Where I would disagree with Joe is that I think back to the 2018 World Cup, and I do think that he made them a disciplined team that was organized, that did know how to play, that did get the best out of the team.
That's not hard to do. Like, that bar is in the basement.
See, I disagree, because I think that having the one that will forever loom large for me is the usage of Paul Pogba, and how it is difficult to get good performances out of him unless he is truly feeling it, and to get him to basically be a player who is okay being a, like, right wing back on occasion, though starting in the midfield but moving out wide to cover as other players get involved in the attack. Like, he was happy to be a role player in that team if it meant that it got them to where they ended up because they had the talent they did. So I do think that there are examples under Deschamps of that team playing attractive football, looking organized, looking like that they have a cohesive plan, which is a very low bar. I will also accept that. It's just that with that French team, with the egos they have, the personas they have, I think it is no small feat to keep them even somewhat in line. When you're bringing Adrian Rabiot and his mom and Paul Pogba and Antoine Griezmann and Kylian Mbappe, it's just there's a lot to manage there. And I think other managers who we praise for being able to do that, like, haven't had the successes Deschamps has had. So, like, I said it in jest a little bit, but Gareth Southgate is an example. When we talk about him as a manager, we talk about somebody who, like, when we had that conversation recently, it was basically what? He's really good with the media in terms of handling the pressure that comes with being England manager and the England national team. It's has, like, the loyalty of the players and the buy-in of the players, and then has pretty cohesive tactics, if not inspiring tactics. I would say Deschamps is the same, except he's won a World Cup. So there is more infighting, I would say, in France that becomes more public. In the end, I'm not sure I'm, like, fully taking or leaving this one, because I don't have the strong opinion that Joe does. And I, to my understanding, Mustard Overlord.
It's like the musical artist Lord, do you mean?
I believe, yes, exactly. The artist formerly known as Lord is now Mustard Overlord. I think this person is very passionate that Deschamps is not a good manager and that there are others who could do more. I think it becomes the age-old question, which many people will probably find frustrating, of who could do better? And there are probably candidates. My question for you all is just, like, is there anyone that you think, and I'm not then going to immediately tear it down, I'm just curious, is there anyone you think could step in and do that job?
Yeah,
in the positives that he has done, but with Deschamps' drawbacks, maybe do a better job in those areas.
Wolf and Dolce.
Yeah, let's go. More on him later. Patrick Vieira is a name that came to mind for me. Like, he is sort of a B-tier club coach, and so I think he's someone that would maybe be interested in finding some success at the international game. Like, someone who's actually showed an ability to create some structures in possession. Again, easier to do that at club level than it is at the national team level. He is a name that came to mind first for me. I cannot believe that both Ryan and Taylor, that you guys are praising Didier Deschamps for his locker room management. There is not a single national team on the men's side on the planet that has had more chaos come out from behind the scenes and has been more distracting than France. I cannot believe that this is the discussion we're having.
Joe,
setting that aside for a second.
Joe, that is an ever-present thing. That is France going back 40 years.
And we're giving Didier Deschamps credit
Joe,
for continuing the status quo of chaos? Absolutely
no,
not.
No, the point is, Joe, it was much worse before him.
Yeah.
There were more mutinies.
No, yeah. I'm not having that.
Joe, you weren't around for the World Cup when the manager was picking it based on, like, astrological signs and what his, like, what's that, like, tarot card reader was telling him.
Is this, wait, what is this? I don't remember this.
That's Raymond Dominic.
For who?
who really did let people, I think it really was, like, astrological charts were involved in the squad selection.
I love this.
There have been some managers for France, and then there have been some chaos managers for France. So yeah. I think of that as, like, sort of an ever-present thing.
Yeah,
maybe similar to the way I think Belgium was for a very long time. I think that was another one that was just known to have implosions in the squad because you had factions, linguistic factions, ethnic factions, and it would just melt down pretty quickly. I think France have a pretty chaotic squad.
I hear you.
I wonder if Zidane would be able to unify because he's Zidane and because he's had the success he has had, if he commands just that much more respect than Deschamps. But Deschamps himself won the World Cup as a player, so who knows for sure? All I'm saying is that I love Didier Deschamps, Joe, and I think he's the best manager on the planet.
That's what I've heard. I hear you guys. I'm like maybe decreasing chaos slightly. Again, the bar's in the basement on this. To go back to the tactical stuff in 2018, it was Matuidi playing on the right side of midfield, not Pogba, right? Like Pogba was in the middle.
No,
next
what
to
I'm
Conte.
Saying is that when Matuidi would go forward, Pogba would slide in and do
okay,
the
yeah,
defensive
yeah, fair
cover.
Enough.
And the idea that Pogba would do defensive cover and not just roam about and do what he wanted was sort of earth-shattering to me.
Yeah,
and
he was Paul Pogba at his peak was absolutely incredible. And if someone can harness that, and Deschamps did a little bit of that, like, he does deserve credit. I just, again, like, are we going to give a manager credit for creating, like, a really solid defensive structure when it's N'Golo Kanté in the middle of that midfield doing a lot of the dirty work? I don't see Didier Deschamps, and I understand they won the World Cup, which is a great feather in his cap, and it's something that I will never do. It's amazing.
Joe's about to butt a World Cup.
Absolutely, I am. Like, do you look at this team when you watch them? I mean, it's been 6 years since the World Cup. Do you look at this team and think, like, oh, man, like they are really the top team in the world right now? Oh, really? They have so much quality. Are they really performing above that ceiling?
Last final as well,
absolutely,
Joe,
they are not. Absolutely, they are not. This is a very good team of excellent players that Didier Deschamps is not doing anything meaningful. Any meaningful things to advance this group forward? I'm absolutely
Ryan,
not having.
Ryan,
this.
What was that last thing you said? Because I feel like that maybe bears repeating.
I feel like in 2022 France did all right, Joe. They went quite far in the World
Absolutely,
Cup.
They did, and that's not down to Didier Deschamps. That's for sure.
Oh, okay, got it.
I think if this question were Didier Deschamps is not a particularly good manager, if this were is not the manager to take them forward, I would be more inclined to agree. The idea that he is the least valuable manager of a top international team, Koeman at Netherlands, I don't know if he's going to elevate them. I don't know if Gareth Southgate is going to do that with England. I think he's been a
he's good got competition, for sure. There are other names in the conversation, for sure.
I think Southgate and Deschamps are in a very similar category for me of managers who came in and I think did very impressive things with fractured and oftentimes not unified squads. Nowadays, I'm not sure if they should still be in charge, and I think that's where I would agree with this question. But, like, Dorival Jr. is managing Brazil. Is that the guy who's going to do it? I literally don't know anything about him. I had to Google, and then when I learned his name, I continued to not know anything about him. So I think there are other managers out there who are worse or would do a worse job. But I understand where this question is coming from. I understand Joe's point, and I look forward to them bombing out of the group stage in the Euros, and then Joe will. Well,
but that's the point, though.
I don't know.
The point is that their players are so incredibly good that their ceiling is so high and their floor is so high. Like, their players are, like, France have the best talent pool in the world still at this point.
Honey,
they
you
be,
haven't seen how low their floor could be at a tournament.
They should be going forward and producing. I mean, well, a lot's changed in the last several decades. When
I loved everything about
that,
Ryan.
France. Like, there is so much ability in this team. And I think to say that Didier Deschamps is helping them, I'm not even sure you guys have said that, I guess. Like, I'm not sure anybody really believes that Didier Deschamps is the best option to move this team forward. But I guess it is just so clear to me that he is hurting, or at the minimum, like, maintaining rather than helping.
Joe, I want to read you some names here really fast. Patrick Vieira, Yuri Djorkaeff, maybe less so. Claude Makélélé, Marcel Desailly, Djibril Cissé, Zinedine Zidane, Thierry Henry, Lilian Thuram, Fabien Barthez, Emmanuel Petit, David Trezeguet, Christophe Dugarry, to name a few. All of those players are in the 2002 France squad that did not get out of the group stage. France can have a ton of talent and still implode majestically.
Absolutely,
I think there's
they
a chance it happens this summer. So I think that is sort of maybe what is framing my mindset, that this is the same national team that won the World Cup in 98 and then bombed in 2002 and has that capability. And so I think any manager that can get relative stability out of them, I am going to give more credit to. I think if you're coming at it from a more recent perspective, which it sounds like you are, I think your perspective is equally valid. And I think some of the where this question is coming from is valid. I just can't fully dismiss what he has done in iterations past.
Yeah. Last thing on this. Fair on all that. And my perspective is certainly more recent than yours and Ryan's for obvious reasons. At the same time, big teams can crash out of knockout tournaments. Like the fact that France did that in 2002, they're not unique for that. Like teams do that. There's always
your point
is
that they're so good that they'll never do that. They did that.
That is absolutely not my point. My point is that there's so much talent in this team. Their ceiling is high. Their floor is high. That doesn't mean that you don't crash out. That doesn't mean that you don't have bad performances. My point is that Didier Deschamps is not maximizing the talent in this team as it relates to them becoming this multifaceted, versatile attacking team that you would want that team to be.
Right. What did he do to you, Joe? What did Deschamps do? Did he insult you? Did he refuse an interview?
It hurts.
He looks identical to my father-in-law, and I still like him. So, Master Overlord, thank you very much for your question. Bailey Bridgman in the Discord says, getting rid of the away goals rule in the Champions League was the correct decision. It made games more entertaining, even if it might not favour the underdog in the long run. Taylor, take for me. I don't know whether I... my rationale, by the way, is that I don't like it when teams can be eliminated from a competition when they haven't really, you know, it's undeserving in some circumstances. And I think I equate it, the away goals rule being eliminated, with Atletico Madrid no longer grinding out low scoring passages through to the next rounds of this competition.
Yep. Yeah. And I think I remember those games where it was like, oh, they won 1-0 on the road. The home leg is going to be a nightmare. Yes, I will take this one. And I think it does make it harder at times for underdogs to get through. And it does sort of take away the reward of going on the road and getting a goal in a 2-1 loss or even getting a win or a draw. Like I remember those then feeling like, wow, that was a really impactful moment. That really could have a huge impact. The tie that Manchester United lost 2-1 to Roma and then beat them 7-1 in the second leg. I remember thinking like, oh no, this is not good. And like my college coach saying to me like, dude, they got an away goal. They're going to be fine. Like that's the level of confidence we had in away goals. But I feel like that took it too far, such that with a lot of the games that we talked about on the Thursday show in the Champions League this week, like Man City scoring 3 goals on the road, that would have been it. Like that tie would have been over in years past, or at least felt over. And so many of the games this week that were so exciting in the second leg were exciting because of what happened in the first leg, but that also there was so much still to play for. And if you were still really valuing those away goals, it would just feel, you would never get that like, oh, sweet, we're going into extra time. Oh, if they score one more, we're going to get extra time. It was that like, wow, they fought back and they got that goal. But now they need one more because the other team scored one on the road. It just really watered down the drama and the excitement for me. So I am fully taking this one.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think I quite articulated my issue with the way it goes properly. Is that you can be eliminated from a contest without losing is my problem with it. You can get a 1-1 and then a 0-0 and then you're gone and you haven't lost. So I find that fundamentally unfair. So I am approving of the away goes rule being removed. Joe, what say you?
Yeah, I'm taking this. I don't miss it at all. Like, I don't watch these games and think, oh, man, I wish you still had the away goals rule. By incentivizing the away team to attack, it also incentivized the home team to defend. And maybe there was some upside there. And I do think there's something to it making games a bit more difficult for the underdog. But also, it's the Champions League, and I'm a neutral, and I kind of just want to see the best teams going out there and winning stuff. So I am taking this. I don't miss it. I don't think the games are, on the whole, worse now than they were before. I think we're better off.
Excellent stuff. All right, we've dealt with Bailey Bridgman's take very nicely there. Uniform decision. We take a quick break now. When we come back, we're talking about the Belgian League and Netherlands Leagues combining, and we're talking about Wilfred Nancy and his potential in the Premier League. Back shortly.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Total Soccer Show's Take It or Leave It. We go now to some takes from X, as I'm reluctantly calling it. Grey Hair Gaming says, the combination of Belgium and Netherlands leagues will kick off league consolidation moving towards an eventual Super League, like conference realignment in college football has. Joe, this one comes from sort of the news that's been brewing. It's not news, it's been brewing for several years now that the Eredivisie and the Belgian Juniper Pro League could join forces. There was a vote a little while ago that Belgian clubs voted in favour of it already. There's been some rule changes in UEFA's league structures that would allow for this kind of thing to happen. It does kind of feel like a slippery slope towards Super League things, but maybe more because of the fact that it's actually allowed to happen in the first place.
I hear all of that, and I hear this take from Grey Hair Gaming. I am leaving this, but only because I can't take all of it. So there are parts of this that I do think are going to happen. I think it's possible that Belgium and the Netherlands on the soccer side will combine, less likely on the government side. But I think it's more likely as maybe a Leagues Cup style combination, or at least that will be the first stage in all of this. I firmly believe that we are going to see more interplay between countries and more interplay between leagues as a direct response to the power shift that's happening right in front of our eyes in soccer right now. The power shifting away from FIFA, shifting away from individual countries or football associations or leagues, and it is shifting towards the clubs. It is Manchester City, it is Real Madrid, it is PSG, it is all those big clubs that are the biggest individual stakeholders in global soccer right now. It is not the Premier League, although they are probably doing the best job of harnessing some of that stuff. It's not any individual leagues. It's none of those things. It is the clubs themselves. We saw that power. We saw them try to take a swing with the Super League and try to tilt the scales further in their favor to basically come in and do more of what MLS is already set up to do, which is to be a bit more closed and to funnel money more directly into some of these different situations. So, there is a real push, I think, for this stuff. And if you're not a big club, if you're not a big league with big clubs in it, and I understand there are some big clubs in Belgium, as Graham would define them, probably. There are some big clubs in the Netherlands, as maybe Taylor and I would define them, to call back to that discussion we had a few months ago. There are still big soccer entities here. The biggest ones aren't there, though. And I think those stakeholders, whether it's the leagues, the FAs, the clubs themselves, who are outside of the big 10 or 12 or whatever the world's biggest clubs are that have the lion's share of the weight behind them these days, those clubs are going to have to react. We're seeing it happen on the other side of the Atlantic from Europe, where we do have MLS and Liga MX interplaying throughout the summer. I don't know if we're going to see this every summer going forward as there's big international tournaments in 26. But we're seeing it this summer, and I don't know about next summer with the Club World Cup, but this is a thing that both of those leagues are committed to and believe add value to their respective leagues. I think that will continue in other parts of the world.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with that, and I'm inclined to take this one as well, Taylor, because I think the precedent that it will set, there's long been talk of Rangers and Celtic joining the English system, and we've already had the Welsh teams join the English system as well. And it feels like a stepping stones that it will create. I'm not sure it will eventually lead to a Super League, because that could happen with or without this scenario, but I do think it could see some more consolidation in certain territories.
Am I? There's maybe an obvious one. Has there been consolidation that I'm not remembering? To your point, Rangers and Celtic has been discussed since I first started following club soccer, but it hasn't happened. And I'm struggling to think of a time when we have seen that sort of merger where you have two struggling leagues decide, you know what, we're going to make this happen, or a big club moves to another league. I feel like there's much less of that in Europe, which, Ryan, is where I would throw the question back to you and ask, Joe and I are coming at this from an American perspective where we might not love certain competitions. I don't love the League's Cup. I think Joe is maybe slightly more positive. But I think there is an American sport more acceptance of, I mean, certainly like franchises moving to start there. Like, I think there is more acceptance of like, yeah, they're going to do that. They're going to try this. They're going to make this league happen. They're going to do this competition. I think it's part and parcel of American sport. I think that is very much less the case in Europe. And I'm wondering if you could speak to how much like traditionalism would limit the ability of leagues to merge like this. Like, we saw with the Super League, but that's the Super League. I'm wondering, do you feel like Belgian and Dutch supporters would be like, no, this goes against all the traditions of what we have in our leagues?
I think it's very country and culture dependent, ultimately, Taylor. Like, the Belgians and the Dutch, their relationship might favour this kind of thing, for example, whereas France and Spain, unlikely, given the culture and tradition of their teams and their leagues, are going to unlikely to accept this kind of thing. And I can't see the Premier League wanting to let in Scottish teams, for example, for similar reasons. Cultural and
I just feel like
tradition.
They get destroyed. It's the main reason there. Yeah. But yeah.
Maybe so. So, Taylor, I think, in the US, you got to think, like, in the Republic of Arizona, teams from Arizona are allowed to play for the rest of the continental United States as well. So there is that cross-border stuff happening here as well.
Until the governor signs that legislation, and then we'll see what happens. the anti-sport legislation, that's totally a thing. I think I will leave this one largely because I don't know if it will be Belgium and the Netherlands kicking it off, but I think that consolidation will probably happen because, to Joe's point, there's just clubs with a lot of power, and I think there is also still that awareness that even if the Premier League isn't winning the Champions League every time, so we don't have that level of dominance, there is still a financial dominance to the Premier League that other huge clubs want to have themselves. And so I think ultimately we will see some sort of consolidation, some sort of rebranding of the Champions League into the Champions League that is the historically biggest clubs all playing against each other, and then everybody else gets to have their own tournament. Like, I think that probably does end up happening at some point. But I don't know if it ends up being the sort of conference college football style thing. I think that would, honestly, if we are going to do that, that would be the most fun, because it would be interesting to just see, like, oh, they're joining that one now. Like, oh, okay. Oh, Turkey's playing Scotland. Okay. Didn't know that they were going to do that together. I feel like it would be interesting to see those combinations and then have those combined leagues play other combined leagues. And now we get the, I don't know, Spain and Italy versus Portugal and Germany. Who's going to win it all? I feel like I would be down for that. So I will leave this, but I take it in spirit at the same time.
All right, wonderful stuff. And just to reiterate, Joe, your take was you were going to...
I'm leaving this, but I think there will be more and more of this sort of cross-league interplay. I just don't know if we're going to see the full-on consolidation that maybe Grey Hair Gaming is talking about here.
Yeah. We're all scared that the Super League is coming, is what I'm getting the vibe of here. But we shall see. Grey Hair Gaming, thank you very much indeed. One more take for today from X/Twitter, from Ashton Johnson, who says, if Brighton lose to Zerbi, Wilfred Nancy would be the perfect replacement. Joseph Lowry, do you take, do you leave?
I take. We've heard a few rumblings about Wilfred Nancy moving on. The Columbus Crew just signed him into a new contract that seems pretty clearly like a, hey, we'd like to be compensated if and when you take this guy from us because he's really, really good at what he does. Obviously, it's not quite a perfect fit because Nancy doesn't have pro managerial experience outside of MLS, which is a problem and maybe enough to derail this. I'm curious what you all think about this. But he's very clearly the best manager in Major League Soccer right now. He's transformed this Columbus Crew team with help certainly from the front office. We can't detach those things from each other. But, man, there's a lot of similarities in how the Crew played, how Brighton play. They're a little more direct, Columbus. Their sequence time is a little bit shorter. I was digging into the numbers earlier today. They press a little bit less as well, but all those feel more like symptoms of the leagues that these two teams play in, where the Premier League, there's a bit larger of a gap between the teams that are going to have to sit super deep and the teams that are going to dominate the ball. And Brighton, to their credit, have found their way into that second category. And MLS, there's just more parity. Like, there's not that same gap between the top and the bottom. So the Crew don't quite have the same level of possession and positional dominance that Brighton do. But if you're looking for continuity, and Brighton should be looking for that, and if you're sort of trying to pull a Brighton like you do with your players on a manager hire, it kind of feels like Wilfred Nancy checks a lot of those boxes.
I'm sold. Taylor, you sold?
Nope. well, rather, yes. Joe makes a very compelling argument why it would be interesting, even if not a perfect fit, why it's something that Brighton would be smart to do, why it could be potentially successful. I agree with all of that. I still think he's an MLS coach.
Yeah.
And it would be immediately covered the way Ted Lasso is covered. Like, unfairly, I would stress, and again, Nancy is French, like, it wouldn't be a big deal if it was, like, a French manager, even, like, managing Liga MX and then moving, I wonder if that would be even more accepted. But I just think there is still a pretty huge bias against Americans, I think especially American managers or anybody connected to American managers. So somebody who had success in Major League Soccer, like, oh, the Mickey Mouse League, who cares? Why is that guy getting a Premier League job? I think that shouldn't be the bar, but it is part of it. And the way it would be covered, the optics on it would be immediately negative, I think. And so that would be, again, I think Brighton have shown to be a smart club who make risky decisions, and then those risky decisions pay off, and that comes in the form of different managers, that comes in the form of different players in their front office. But I still think the optics alone would, like, the PR department would be like, no, we don't want to get this hit. We don't want this to be a talking point every time we're discussed, every time we lose. And I think that's unfair. I think Joe has laid out why it could be a good hire. I just think I'm leaving it because ultimately there's still too much baggage there.
Yeah, I think that's entirely fair, Taylor, in terms of your assessment of what would happen. I don't think the reality of that is particularly fair. It does sort of tie with my biggest reservation of this take. I think, and I'm not sure this is wrong, I think there's probably still a good argument to say that MLS managers, even the best ones, should go do it over in Europe at a lower level before jumping to the best league in the world. Like, I'm not sure that this would set Wilfred Nancy up for success, even though I think he would do well. I would feel a lot better about him going to Ligue 1. And like, I don't know, go and have a successful season or two there and then go take a big job. I don't know how likely any of this is to happen. It's obviously hard to predict. What I will say, Taylor, even though I generally agree with your discussion about how it would be perceived, Nance feels more akin to Ange Postecoglou than he does to Bob Bradley. When I think about managers from still sort of the fringes of the upper levels of the game, and that is where Postecoglou comes from, Celtic, or in those European conversations, it is an easier transition to go from Celtic to the Premier League, even to Tottenham, a much bigger club than Brighton, than it is to go from Columbus, Ohio, to Brighton in the Premier League. Like, it's an easier jump. But Postecoglou has captivated folks, I think, with his personality and with how he talks to the media, which is a big part about creating the culture around your team, because those of us on the outside do have some say in that stuff. Nance, I think, has done a lot of very similar stuff. You go to Wilfred Nance press conference, you talk to the guy, you listen to what he says. It is hard not to give him credibility, even if maybe he's one job short of actually having that traditional credibility. So again, I hear what you're saying. I think Wilfred Nance is unique among MLS managers, maybe ever, in how he presents himself, how he's approached games tactically, and how he talks. When you hear him speak, like, he's just sort of in his own little category. And I do think that puts him in a better position to do this sort of thing than most coaches who have been in Major League Soccer.
Yep. Agree on everything you said. And I find myself then really annoyed by the idea that, like, if he left Columbus at the end of the season, went to Celtic, got them playing good football, and they won the league, then he becomes a more attractive candidate to Premier League clubs. And Graham is definitely not here, right? Graham's not here. Graham's
always here. Okay, cool.
Yeah. I'm not sure that's a huge step up for him to go from the Crew to Celtic. Like, yes, they're a globally known club. Yes, they have had tons of success. But I don't know. It's like, it's going from a really competitive league. That's the point of Major League Soccer, is for it to be competitive. To go to a league where you are expected to win the title, and if you do, there's still a feeling of like, okay, but what else did you do? Did you win 10 in a row? So, like, it's frustrating that that's probably the type of move he would need to make, and simultaneously it feels like a move he shouldn't have to make. So I look forward to the days when we can evaluate managers based on the content of their teams, but until then, I feel like any connection to Major League Soccer is still going to be a significant hurdle for coaches to overcome. Like, Vieira was probably the one who I felt like was best positioned to come out of coaching in MLS, make that move to Europe, and then, what was that, Nice? Is that where he went?
Yeah, Nice was the jump.
And that, to your point, Joe, I feel like is the kind of stepping stone that you do to then have success, to then get that next big gig, and that hasn't gone the way we thought it might with Vieira, although Joe has him going to France, so we'll see what happens there. But I still think it would be a fascinating hire, and one that would probably be okay for Brighton, especially given that Brighton aren't particularly good right now.
Yeah, I agree with everything you've both said, but I do wonder if you overestimate the baggage of coming from MLS and maybe conflating it with the baggage of being American, when it comes to coaching in the Premier League. Because if I'm the average Brighton fan, I'm probably thinking, oh, look, he's a French coach who's coming over. Oh, he's had experience in two different countries, if I'm looking at his Wikipedia feed, technically. Yeah. I'm looking at a player who played his career in France. And I'm not necessarily looking at the MLS side of things. I'm looking at a European who's done it in different continents, essentially. So I think maybe we overestimate. It's not the danger of him becoming like a Ted Lasso cliche, I think, is quite low, because he's not going to be doing the homespun American cliche sayings or anything like that. He's not going to be like a Bob Bradley caricature in any way, because he's French.
Yeah.
I don't think that. I think, yes, there may be a little bit of baggage among some for the MLS thing, but I think maybe that's overestimated.
Bob Bradley is also a bad example. I think I threw that one out at first.
No, I think
Bob Bradley is one who goes USA, then like different national team gigs, then like Ligue 2.
There's
like
a lot of stops along the way. Yeah.
Then like somewhere in Scandinavia, I think. Then he gets the Swansea gig along like that route. So there still hasn't really been like Jesse Marsh has a very different trajectory as well. So I'm not even sure there's a good comparison to make there.
No, there's not a great one. But Ryan, I think that's an interesting point. It's hard to say, right? It's hard to say how much that matters. I think it should matter less than it seems like it has throughout history. But there also haven't been, let's be honest, a lot of like really distinct managers that have been in MLS over the years. Just hasn't really happened. And some of them have worked their way over to Europe, and some have had success and some haven't. Nantes is not your prototypical Major League Soccer manager. For his background, coming to Montreal with basically a backpack and not a whole lot else, having success there, working with Thierry Henry, like there are lots of things that can give you some credibility if you're Wilfred Nantes going over to a European job like that. And I sort of to close this out, I would be at this point a little more surprised than not if in the next calendar year, Wilfred Nantes, or give me 14 months, let's get to the summer. If in the next 14 months, Wilfred Nantes is not coaching somewhere towards the bottom of a big four European league, or maybe a bit higher up the table in Liga.
Okay. One other comparison, Wayne Rooney went straight from MLS to the English system. That went great.
It did. So I think that's the path that everybody should be following. Yeah.
Indeed. Also, I'll say if you're a Brighton fan, you probably have a lot of faith in the system that you have there. And you know your owner is very empirical with his choices.
If you're a Brighton fan, let us know what you think. Actually, I'd be fascinated to hear your perspective, because I'm certainly coming at this from a Wilfred Nantes pro angle. And I'm guessing Taylor and Ryan are sort of as well, because they have to listen to me talk about him every week. I'm curious what someone who's maybe not quite so deep into this realm would say.
Yeah. I suppose my point would be, if you're a Brighton fan, you've got faith.
No, for sure.
If they did bring in Nantes, they're doing it for a reason, and they've made the choice because of data, essentially.
Shout out data.
Shout out data. Indeed. All right. Thank you very much, Aston, for that take. Thank you for all the takes we've had on this here episode. And of course, thank you to Mr. Taylor Rockwell for taking or leaving as appropriate.
Thank you both. I really enjoyed this one.
As did I. Joe Lowry, thank you very much, my good man.
Thanks, guys. This was fun.
It was indeed. Listener, thank you for listening along as well. We'll be back on that feed very shortly indeed. But for now, bye.